Good morning. I'm not going to officially call this meeting to order yet because we don't quite have a quorum, but we will have one momentarily. But I would like to begin with our invocation or pledge and start with our open microphone speakers so we can listen to our citizens. The only thing we cannot do is respond, so we will not be dialoguing until we have a quorum. With that, we will begin. Thank you, Pastor Stephen Hayes, for coming in and giving us our invocation. Stephen is a speaker, a pastor, a leader. He serves as a founding associate pastor for the Ministry of Covenant Church with over 14,000 members and more than 8,000 in weekend worship service. Covenant is a standard bearer for churches worldwide, an important member of the Dallas community, and we appreciate your ministry to the community. Stephen communicates with leaders and facilitates powerful ministry across the four Covenant Church campuses in the Dallas area. He lives in North Dallas with his wife Erica and his two children, Bella and Max. Pastor Hayes, thank you for doing this, and please rise in that following. Ms. Alonzo will give us the Pledge of Allegiance. Pastor Hayes.
Good morning. Let's pray. Morning. Father, we thank you for the great opportunity that we have to serve your people. Your word says that we are called to be your hands and feet and to season the earth, Father. We thank you, Lord, that we have the great opportunity to serve your people in this great nation, but even the greater Dallas city area. I want to just thank you right now for the councilmen and the mayor and the women, Lord, that serve this community so faithfully. Lord, I just selfishly even thank you for their commitment, Lord, to the longevity of this great city. Lord, I pray right now that the peace of heaven, Lord, your peace that passes all understanding would rest upon them as they delegate and decide and work, Lord, to secure our future, our safety, and the longevity, Lord, of this great city. We thank you, Lord, that because of their faithfulness, Lord, your word in Proverbs says that your people perish for a lack of wise counsel. But where there are great counselors, there is safety. And I thank you, Lord, that in this room there's great counsel. Guide them. Give them your peace. Lord, I pray for their families, for breakthrough in their families. Lord, that just as Isaiah says that things that used to take a long time, like climbing a mountain, would become like highways, Lord, as you lead us. Let their time served to their community be like a highway compared to a tumultuous mountaintop, Father. I thank you, Lord, that it would be smooth sailing from here. Bless them, pressed down, shaken together, and running over is the blessing because of their time committed. In your Son's mighty name we pray. Amen. Amen.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We will begin our. Thank you, Pastor. Appreciate it. Please pass on our appreciation to the church and all your
efforts. Absolutely.
So we will now officially call the meeting to order at 9:14, Tuesday, November 18, 2014.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your five registered speakers for the morning session are Andrew Carter, Kermit Mitchell, Mel Blazer, Ben Gersh, and Catherine Seeley. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum.
Ms. Rios, is your mic on?
It's on. Mm-hmm. I'll just
we need the volume up or something. Thank you.
Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks will be removed from this session of the meeting. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please allow the next individual their turn. State your name and address for the record when you come up to the podium, and your comments need to be addressed to Mayor Rawlings. Again, your first speaker, Andrew Carter. Andrew Carter, not present. Kermit Mitchell.
Good morning. Kermit Mitchell, 5659 Marblehead Drive, Dallas, Texas, 75232, District 3. The path forward. Now, Omni Dallas Convention Center Hotel was financed in 2009 for $479 million. The current appraisal for the hotel is $200 million. The interest rate on the $388 million Series B bonds was 7.1% with a 35% federal Build America subsidy. The city manager has not issued an RFP to sell the hotel, but has expressed interest in proposals to buy. KGM Enterprises has made a proposal to buy the hotel at $480 million. The city manager increased the price to $650 million on the basis that cost overruns to be recovered. Upon investigation, it has been determined that the hotel was built under budget, no cost overruns. The city manager maintained the price at $650 million on the basis of a $170 million defeasance fee. Upon investigation, it has been determined that there is no basis for such a $170 million defeasance fee. The price for the hotel therefore returns to the original offer of $480 million. There has been interest expressed in the price increase to $500 million so that the city has a profit. The offer to purchase was increased to $500 million based on a 4% or lower current interest rates. The purchase proposal involves $309 million cash for early redemption of $309 million in Series B bonds. State and local taxes per the economic development agreement would contribute to debt repayment. An accredited source of financing has been introduced to the city to meet the purchase requirements by the buyer. The early redemption dates for the Series B bonds are January 1st and July 1st of each year. The Series B bond holders are due 30 days notice before such early redemption, December 1st, in this case, 2014. $309 million redemption would yield $108 million in returned federal 3.5% Build America subsidy. This $108 million in return subsidy could well be exchanged for new needs of the city of Dallas. A use for these funds could be incentives for financing the rail system needed for urban growth. In the summary of this, KGM Enterprises has made a proposal to buy the hotel at $480 million. The offer to purchase was increased to $500 million based on 4% or lower interest rates. The early redemption dates for the Series B bonds are January 1st and July 1st of each year. The Series B bond holders are due 30 days notice for early redemption. That's December 1st this year. Now is the time to vote approval to sell the hotel in order to meet the December and January dates.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell.
Your next speaker, Mel Blazer. Mr. Blazer will be followed by Ben Gush.
Hi, Mel Blazer, 2451 Matlin Drive, Dallas, Texas. In the late 1960s, the federal government established regulations which resulted in the phasing out of older, noisier aircrafts from the nation fleet and replaced them with quieter and newer planes. Your vote last week to grant the CAF permissions to operate out of Dallas Executive Airport took us back over 50 years because the planes that the CAF flies are actually older and noisier than the normal planes. This was proof by the beginning of October. We had an air show, and the air show was very noisy. In fact, I left town because of the noise over my home. CAF will be located in a noise-sensitive area of the city in the middle of a residential neighborhood, which are essential to providing economic, social, and cultural stability to the city. There are homes around the Dallas Golf Club, which is in the $300,000 to $400,000 home area. Many of these people are retired, such as myself, and the majority of our investment to a lot of people is in the home that they live in. It's important that CAF, a commemorative air force, be operated in a manner which protect and preserve the quality of life in the surrounding neighborhoods. In order to balance these needs, the city of Dallas needs to adopt a mandatory noise abatement policy for CAF to recognize the neighbors of the Dallas Executive Airport and CAF neighbors in neighborhood some respect as far as the overall stability of the neighborhood. The resources and a noise control policy for CAF should be established to provide a forum for discussion among commemorative Air Force neighbors, airport operators, federal and city aviators, which represent many issues related to noise and noise abatement by CAF. I propose that the committee review all CAF operations, propose changes to the operations, and compliance to the mandatory noise abatement program. We need a way to reject CAF contract if compliance are not met. We shouldn't have to live with a noisy neighbor and a dangerous neighbor. The city should consider subsidizing the installation of noise abatement windows and doors for the neighbors of the Dallas Executive Airport and CAF if regulations are not met. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ben Gersh.
Good morning, Ben Gersh, 3318 Shady Hollow Lane, Dallas, Texas, 75233. Dallas Executive Airport is a unique airport. It's nestled in the middle of several high-density neighborhoods. It either shares a property line with or is just feet from single-family homes, apartments, schools, and churches. I personally live 200 feet from the property line. For several months, neighbors have been asking to be included in the decision process with regards to development at the airport. As citizens, we should not have to beg for inclusion. Our input should be aggressively sought by the City of Dallas and the Aviation Department. An airport, by its very nature, is not a contained facility. Noise and pollution from vintage planes and jets does not stop at the airport property lines. All this being said, we are welcome for real economic development for Southern Dallas with open arms. We want to fully understand the plans and have the opportunity to provide input to ensure our quality of life is not diminished prior to the projects coming to City Council. I have significant concern that the CAF will not bring economic development to our neighborhood, but bring pollution and disruption. The city has only one chance to get this right. If not, we are looking at years and years of noise and pollution-related complaints, as well as exacerbating the financial drain Dallas Executive Airport has become. The airport currently loses more than $1 million per year. How is this $8.7 million investment going to change that trend? Where is the in-depth financial impact study, or is this based on a gut feeling? These vintage planes create excessive noise and pollution. How is it adding to the equation going to positively impact the lives of the families that live so close to the airport? The city is in a position at this point to do the right thing and walk away from the economic development disaster that neither affords the citizens of Dallas a strong return on investment nor the neighborhoods of the neighbors of the airport with an enhanced quality of life. It is very surprising to me that the council is not aware of the strong concern neighbors of the airport have about development activity and the lack of transparency. Any comments to the contrary are plainly false. At our request, we have had numerous standing room only meetings with the City Aviation asking for inclusion and transparency, as well as with the CAF to voice our concern about their financial viability. This deal with the CAF is not wanted by the residents of District 3 despite what you have been told, nor does it make financial sense. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Catherine Seeley.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Griggs. We've got some technical difficulties this morning.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank you, Mayor. Ryan is part of this CAF deal, is this coming back in December, the second part of it?
Yes, sir. We have one more piece to go on December 10th.
One more piece on December 10th. Well, I'll be, as I said before, I'm still interested in the noise abatement and the noise component, and particularly limiting the flights, the maintenance flights on the weekends, just so everyone can have a quiet morning, and also on getting the noise abatement policy in ahead of time, so it's mandatory before everyone signs on the dotted line, rather than it being voluntary down the road. So I'll be looking at that. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Catherine Silly.
Good morning. Catherine Seal, 5500 Chatham Hill Road, 75220 in District 13. Thank you, Mayor, and also council members for your attention this morning. Mayor, especially want to thank you for your interest in time. I want to be talking about the historic preservation briefing item that's first on your agenda this morning. Also want to recognize the council members in the Arts, Culture, and Library Committee for putting this on your agenda today. I also want to compliment you, the council members, for your appointments on the Landmark Commission. I chair that commission, and I want to tell you it's a very diverse, very practical, and very thoughtful group. I feel that the events in downtown present a timely opportunity to address the role of historic preservation in the city as we move into the future. Since the beginning of the historic preservation program, which was started in Dallas in the early 1970s, it was understood that the viability of this effort was dependent and supported by the relevance to its citizens. Therefore, I think the time has come to reaffirm this connection between preservation and the consensus needed to uphold it by examining the role of preservation now in the midst of great growth as Dallas establishes its place among leading urban cities in the United States. So how do we do this? Well, staff is recommending in your briefing three strategies for you to consider. The first is a demolition delay, and I believe you got a memo from Preservation Dallas regarding that. The second is an updated preservation plan. This is something sorely needed, but requires a lot of money. And the third is a recommended city manager appointed task force to be comprised of Downtown Dallas and Preservation Dallas. The goal is to prioritize preservation efforts in the downtown area. This is a concept that I helped develop, but after consulting with organizations and council members, and as chairman of the Landmark Commission, I'm appointing an advisory task force under Landmark Commission to do just this, to take on this important task. It will bring new voices, and also voices not heard from a while, into the deliberation. Therefore, representative groups will include the AIA, Downtown Dallas, Preservation Dallas, Greater Dallas Planning Council, the Real Estate Council, American Planning Association, National Society of Professional Engineers, and downtown developers. I think it's appropriate to focus on the larger definition of downtown inside the loop. Recommendations will come back to the council for your consideration. The advisory committee is already being informed with Landmark Commission approval. The clock starts ticking, and we'll come back to you within 90 days. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Ms. Seal, for serving the city as chairman of the Landmark Commission. Appreciate it.
Your next speaker, Scott Potter. Mr. Potter is the final speaker this morning.
Good morning. My name is Scott Potter. I live at 4843 Junius Street. Mayor and council members, I am a real estate professional working in the downtown Dallas area. I'm a resident of Dallas's Peak Suburban Historic District and Council District 2. And I'm also a board member and VP of Preservation Issues for Preservation Dallas. I want to thank you for giving special attention to the presentation you're going to be seeing here shortly, and appreciate the attention that you're giving to this matter regarding preservation in the downtown district. As you'll see in the presentation, there are a number of buildings that are unprotected in our downtown district, and specifically in the National Register Historic District. I am a proponent of property rights, but I believe that, like many residents, downtown belongs to everyone in the city of Dallas, and even, frankly, citizens of the greater Texas area. I believe that a demolition delay will afford the public a chance for public input to determine what is best for the downtown area and frankly, educate property owners about financial incentives that may exist to create adaptive reuse developments for their properties. I also support the task force that was just outlined by Catherine Seal. I think this is a great step forward in coming up with some ideas that will be presented to the city here shortly by stakeholders in the downtown district. And I again want to thank you for your attention to this matter. Thank you.
Thank you for coming down.
That concludes your speakers this morning, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We've got some items. We'll begin that.
Yes. Your first item is approval of minutes of the November 5, 2014 City Council meeting.
We've got a motion and a second. Any edits? Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item number two is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. You have to the Civil Service Board Sharon L. Vansell, who is nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Alonzo. And to the Reinvestment Zone 17 Board, TOD, Neil D. Sleeper is nominated by Councilmember Medrano and meets the Dallas County resident qualification.
Do we have a second? We have a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item number three is receive the report of the canvassing committee and adopt a resolution accepting the canvassing committee's report, declaring the results of the November 4, 2014 special election on amendments to the charter of the city of Dallas.
Thank you. I will receive the report now. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. The ad hoc canvas committee consisting of myself as chair, council members Adam Medrano, Carolyn Davis, and Jennifer Gates, with Councilmember Von Seal Jones Hill as an alternate who is absent, appointed by Mayor Mike Rawlings on September 24th, 2012, to canvass the returns of the City of Dallas special election held on Tuesday, November 4th, 2014, for the purpose of submitting to qualified voters of the City of Dallas the following propositions. Proposition number one, regarding additional disclosures on ballots for bond programs. Proposition number two, revising restrictions as to city officials and employees and exempting board and commission members from certain restrictions involving city contracts. Proposition number three, allowing certain changes to the thoroughfare plan without mailing notice to adjacent property owners. Proposition number four, amending the provision for non-discrimination in city employment. Proposition number five, requiring the City Council to set the annual budget for the city auditor directly. Proposition number six, revising the redistricting process. Proposition number seven, municipal judges and board and commission members must resign to run for other offices. Proposition number eight, increasing compensation for the mayor and council members. Proposition number nine, technical amendments to conform to state law, city code, and actual practices. To correct terms, to correct spelling, to clarify language, and to correct cross-references. The ad hoc canvas committee makes the following report to the full City Council, a copy of which has been provided to each of you. Based upon the statement of returns for the City of Dallas special election held on Tuesday, November 4th, 2014, we find that propositions 1, 2, and 4 through 9 received sufficient votes to be approved by the qualified voters of the City of Dallas participating in the election. We find that Proposition 3 did not receive sufficient votes to be approved by the qualified voters of the City of Dallas participating in the election. And the Ad Hoc Canvas Committee recommends the City Council adopt the resolution accepting the report. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you for that report. I will now entertain a motion and a second to approve. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, Judge Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If I would like to add to the record, please, that the alternate is not required to attend. The alternate is there only if a committee member is absent. I would like that in the record, please.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want clarification that the committee was appointed on September 2013. Is that what I heard, or I thought I heard September 12th? I just wanted to clarify.
I believe the council was appointed by Mayor Mike Rawlings on September 24th, 2014.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried, and the report will be sent to Austin for the charter changes. Thank you.
Agenda item number 4 is authorized supplemental agreement number 1 to the professional services contract with Kaplan, Kirsch, and Rockwell LLP for additional services necessary on matters relating to the gate accommodations at Dallas Love Field.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion to approve. We have a second.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item number 5 is authorize an amendment to resolution number 14-1888 to increase expenses from $1,030,509 to $1,259,034 to include disclosure council fees associated with the issuance of general obligation refunding and improvement bonds, series 2014, and a principal amount not to exceed $635 million.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion. We got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Your briefings follow, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We'll begin with briefing A, preservation status in the Downtown National Register District. Mr. Gonzalez.
Mayor and Council, this morning, your two morning speakers, I think, gave a good introduction of the presentation. This morning, David Kossum will be delivering that presentation. David?
Good morning. Also joining me up here are Neva Ding, who all of you probably know as the Interim Assistant Director over Zoning and also over Preservation Dallas. Some of you may not be quite as familiar with Mr. Doty. Mark Doty is our Preservation Officer and also an author of a book that unfortunately documents some of the lost architecture of Dallas. And he has assured me that he has no interest in writing a second volume. So, as I don't think anybody really would like to see that second volume. So the purpose of this briefing really is to review the city historic districts within the Downtown National Register District and other parts of downtown. We are going to provide an overview of current code provisions in terms of establishing a moratorium on demolitions. We're asked to identify the most significant contributing structures in the National Register District that do not currently have local protection, and also suggest possible strategies and actions. And lastly, of course, obtaining direction from this body as what the next steps should be. During the week of September 21st, 4 buildings listed as contributing to Downtown National Register District were demolished. And this is really what's brought this issue to the forefront currently. The Arts, Culture, and Libraries Committee did request a briefing on the ability to establish a moratorium on demolitions. Then they also forwarded this to full council for a briefing and to kind of discuss some of the significant buildings that are not currently protected. On page 4, we just provided a glossary of terms that you can refer to, just very basic stuff that we'll get to as we proceed through the presentation. On page 5, you just see a list of historic preservation benefits. Obviously, we feel and see many of those. Clearly, there's benefit in maintaining these historic structures and protecting them. It does foster civic and neighborhood pride and a sense of identity for the city. It also helps preserve our diverse history and architectural styles. Certainly, it has proven to enhance property values by preserving those unique attributes in a particular area. It also conserves valuable resources through the existing use of our built environment. This is clearly a as we talk about sustainability in general, this is always a goal and objective to utilize our existing infrastructure and built environment where possible. In addition, obviously, there are economic benefits through tourism, as well as investment into these historic buildings. I'd like to cover local designation first, just talk about that process a bit. Generally, the building and structure should be over 50 years, but that's not required, but it also must be found to be significant under three or more criteria. Examples of that criteria would be the historical context of the building, the architecture itself of the building, the uniqueness of the building, the architect that actually designed the building, or even significant persons that building is associated with. The most recent historic district, of course, was recognizing Catherine Gilliam's home as a historic structure. Clearly, the benefits, as we previously discussed, the benefits of the local designation, however, that we can identify unique preservation criteria to that specific structure. So it's oftentimes beneficial to identify these singularly versus in a historic district context, unless the buildings in a broader district all share the same characteristics. Once those are established, then it does require the review by staff for routine maintenance, things like painting, some window, but it also makes them eligible for local property tax abatements. Currently, we have over 140 such districts within the city. In terms of initiating, either a property owner may apply for the historic overlay process, or it can be initiated by the Landmark Commission, City Plan Commission, or City Council. Once an initiation does begin, however, we will send out notices to the persons that are impacted 10 days prior to the public hearing. And that does establish a pre-designation moratorium where no permits may be issued to alter or demolish a structure without a public hearing in front of the Landmark Commissions. Property owner, should the Landmark Commission choose to designate it, the property owner may appeal that decision to City Council. And lastly, on local designation, again, once the process is initiated, there is a pre-designation moratorium. This was one of the key questions that came out of Library Arts and Culture that we were asked to address, was how is a moratorium established? We also talk about this here in a few pages on page 11. But once that initiation begins, structure cannot be altered without obtaining a CA from the Landmark Commission, cannot be demolished without obtaining a CA for demolition. Any interested party may appeal the decision of the Landmark Commission to grant or deny a demolition to the City Plan Commission. Staff will work with the Landmark Commission's designation committee to prepare a designation report, which establishes the preservation criteria. Then, of course, there are public hearings required to establish the district by the Landmark Commission, City Plan Commission, and then City Council. The national designation is a little bit easier in some respects, a little bit quicker, and also provides benefits. It's administered through the Texas Historical Commission. Any building older than 50 years can be nominated, but it should be significant under one or more of the criteria, very similar to the local criteria that we previously mentioned. Again, anyone can nominate it, but the process can take 6 to 12 months. The benefits of national designation or the recognition as a place of significance, but in addition, it does qualify for federal tax credits and is also more recently eligible for state tax credits. However, there is no protection from demolition unless state or federal monies are used. And typically that time period, they could not demolish the structure within 5 years after that tax credit is given. It can be renewed, so that's possible to extend, but it's not a permanent designation in terms of preventing demolition on the site. Currently, there are over 125 National Register districts within the city. That includes 27 of the broader districts and 99 individual properties. We talked about the moratorium previously, but again, the pre-designation moratorium does take effect once notices are given to initiate the process. And that will last up to 2 years. It will last for 2 years unless some action's taken prior to that to either cease the process or to implement the historic district. The next slide is a map of the downtown National Register District. What you see outlined in blue is the National Register District. What you see hatched in gold are the local districts within that area. The history of our National Register District dates back to 2006, when the city initially pursued the concept. We did hire an outside consultant to help with it. The NR district was approved by the Texas Historical Commission and the National Park Service. We did expand it to the south in 2009. And since 2006, 16 properties either completed or currently under review construction within the National Register districts, and they've taken advantage of the federal tax credit incentive for a total of $672 million. The next slide, again, is just an attempt to kind of break down where we're at currently within that particular area on how many structures are actually protected within the National Register districts through local districts. That is 39. Of all the contributing structures, we have lost 13. Since the adoption of the district in 2006. And this is kind of an example of some of the trade-offs that sometimes we're asked to consider. Four were demolished as a result of the acquisition for Main Street Garden. Clearly that had some benefits to bringing light to Dallas City Hall, the Statler, the old library, the Titch building. So there are sometimes trade-offs that need to be considered. Another example of that was 1900 Young, where it was the first Presby project that resulted in the development of Encore Park. That was a local designation as well, so there was negotiated as part of that some of the brick facade you see around the park and the maintenance of that. So that did provide some trade-offs. There are 38 contributing structures within the historic district that are not currently designated as local landmarks or in local districts. Of those, seven have received TIF or federal funding. Six others have TIF or federal funding pending. We've identified 21 that are currently in use, and many of those have been rehabilitated and are currently occupied. There are four out there that are currently vacant or really have no substantial investment that's been put into them of recent times. Again, one of the tasks given by the Arts, Culture, and Library Committee was really to identify significant structures that are not currently protected by local historic districts. We've identified eight structures that are listed as contributing in the National Register District but are not current city historic district. These structures clearly possess historical, architectural, cultural attributes and characteristics that make them unique to Dallas and represent the city's development and character. Several of these were recognized as iconic structures to the identity of downtown Dallas. On page 16, we start looking at those. The Continental Building, the Statler Hilton, which is currently under a major redevelopment proposal. Then on the next slide, we have the Gulf States Building. Again, a beneficiary of city TIF. The 211 North Irvay, and you'll see notes kind of talking about their significance. The next slide, perhaps two of our most iconic structures to me in any instant, in any event, would be the Neiman Marcus Building or the Wilson Building across the street. And there are other smaller buildings that also are very unique in their architecture and significant. You see those on page 19, 1908 Canton, and 2024 Commerce Street. Of the eight structures, two have been recently adaptively reused for residential after being vacant for an extended period of time. Two, the Statler Hilton and 211 North Irvay, are under construction for new office mixed-use development after being vacant for an extended period of time. Neiman Marcus, of course, has occupied their existing structure and have made several additions since moving to that site in 1908. The Wilson Building, while adaptively used as residential, has been continuously occupied with other uses since construction in 1904. The commercial structure on Commerce Street has gone through several uses recently and is now an office. The Desco Tile Building, which was also on the last slide, has continuously been occupied with several uses over its lifetime. Of the eight structures, it seems as though the smaller commercial structures may be the most susceptible to redevelopment proposals or major modifications, or at risk for demolition. In addition to these very significant structures, we did go ahead and look a little deeper in terms of what we believed were the most endangered structures. The following four structures on the next slide are listed as contributing structures in the National Register District, but are not local historic districts. No protection currently exists to prevent the demolition of these structures. These structures are currently vacant or underutilized and are located in areas that are prime for redevelopment or new construction. And clearly they can be combined with adjacent sites, which basically makes them at risk for perhaps demolition or reuse. Those are listed on the next two slides, 1404 Main, 2026 Commerce, 1775 Young, and 1820 Canton Street. These are all kind of identified as perhaps some of the more endangered buildings. So we wanted to look at what were the results of a broad local historic district initiation, and that would be what would happen if we just initiated the process, which would establish a pre-designation moratorium. It would apply to all structures, contributing and non-contributing, impacting both demolitions and exterior modifications. All demolitions and modifications would be vetted at a public hearing. No exterior alterations could occur without an approved CA from staff or Landmark Commission. The pre-designation moratorium would last for a period of 2 years unless otherwise terminated by the city. It may discourage or delay investment in some instances. It, however, would also prevent additional demolitions in the area without a public hearing. So at this point, we'd like to just kind of cover a recommended strategy move forward. We would recommend forming a task force to prioritize preservation efforts in the downtown Dallas area. We do feel like it's important to have a broad task force that includes the downtown stakeholders, the preservation community, any staff expertise, and perhaps a facilitator to help move the process forward. The task force mission would be to develop a preservation strategy for the area, to identify structures to be locally designated, and to get back to this body within 90 days, at least with a progress report, if not final set of recommendations. Clearly, there's a need to update our city preservations plan. This is a more broad effort that would impact the entire city in terms of looking at developing strategies for improving our preservation regulations, perhaps to suggest amendments to current historic districts, and to identify important structures or areas that are not currently protected. Lastly, in terms of demolition process changes, staff at this time has gone ahead and implemented a process that will at least daylight the issue. Demolitions in the downtown core, we're going to provide notice to city departments, the council office, and area utilities. But the permit will ultimately have to be issued once a notice period expires. Our rationale for that is clearly downtown's a very unique high density, high activity area where some notice should be given. Will ensure public safety, ensure no interference with planned infrastructure maintenance, provides our preservation officer kind of just to verify what is already within our GIS system and parcel maps, and of course ensures no interference with any scheduled special events within the area. So at this time, we're really seeking council direction on where they'd like to see this effort move towards. We'll be happy to respond to any questions. And as you've already heard, obviously we have members from the preservation community and downtown stakeholders in the audience as well.
Thank you, Mr. Cossum. Thank you, Mr. Kingston, for chairing the committee that brought this forward. Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez, for this work. We'll take questions. And are you 12? I'm reading here. I'm seat 12. Is that you?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I don't know. So,
Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Gonzalez, Mr. Cossum, this is good work. I appreciate you doing this. Tell me what feedback we've gotten from property owners.
Well, we've asked them to be in options here. I think there's always a little bit of nervousness, obviously, when you're looking at
downtown impacting possible development within the downtown community. I've not heard any really direct resistance to anything, but I don't know that there's been time really to get a lot of feedback yet from the community downtown.
I think we need to make sure that we're getting their feedback and listening to them in this process. Absolutely. And the end result, I want to be that we preserve the structures that are historically significant. I think that we can be creative about doing that in ways that least impact property owners' flexibility in utilizing the property. Sometimes property owners are critical of historic preservation as impeding adaptive reuse, and I don't think we've done that in Dallas typically. I think we've been pretty creative and flexible about it, but it's something to remember. I am personally, convinced by Ms. Seal's presentation that we need to have a broader task force than is contemplated in your briefing. And I do really want to involve the Landmark Committee. These are volunteers who are experts in this field that are already willing to help us. One of the things that Ms. Seal pointed out is that we tried to hire a consultant back during the downturn and kind of ran out of money for that process. This could be a great money-saving step that we can take since we have people who are willing to donate their time and attention to this. I don't think we need to beat ourselves up about this too much. This is a wake-up call. This is Preservation Dallas and other preservation groups really turning their attention to this, and city staff too. I really think that we're just, you know, we're learning how to preserve our downtown because it's started to become important again. I think it's actually a problem of success. Yeah. So I appreciate the attention to this. I also wanted to recognize Valletta Lill in the audience, who, I don't know, she's not the original preservation politician in Dallas, but she's maybe the most important one. If you all haven't been to St. Anne's, that's a historic building that Valletta helped get preserved and has gone on to a great adaptive reuse, is really like a neighborhood center now. Let's refine the task force idea. I'd also like to see, and probably Mr. Ernst's office needs to weigh in on this, we need to talk about a longer moratorium period. You've done the right thing here, David, because you've put in the 10-day period that you can do from your office administratively, and I think that's incredibly valuable. But let's talk about a longer period, one that is rational, that doesn't impede progress when we need reinvestment and redevelopment in downtown, but also that gives people enough time to adequately vet whether a building is deserving of protection when it's threatened. And I think that could be a question for the task force, but we understand that that's going to have to come back to council, and we'll be happy to hear that when it gets here. I think that's all I got. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, and Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, David, for this presentation. I agree with Council Member Kingston that we really need to have the owners involved in this process. I'm always very concerned about, you know, trampling on people's property rights. They own and buy buildings for a long time, and a lot of these buildings have sat idle for a long time during the downturn without much interest in historic preservation, and now that we have the opportunity to redevelop them and really increase property values in downtown, all of a sudden we have this group kind of jumping on it. But if we engage the owners, and show the owners why it's good to preserve these buildings and how they can actually increase their values, then we really can even avoid a 10-day moratorium period, because then we have consensus between the owners and what the preservationists want. I think that's the 10-day moratorium is kind of like the final straw when we get to that point, and hopefully we won't have to get there through encouraging them to do the right thing. On the task force, I think involving the Landmark Commission and possibly even involving the Real Estate Council in that would be good. And also,
Ms. Seal said that.
But that isn't what was in the. And the other thing is, if we really do want to encourage preservation, and we have, you know, pushback from owners, maybe we could look for some economic development grants to help offset the loss in value that some of these owners would perceive by doing a preservation. And that way the city can kind of put up the money that it could potentially be taken away by, or the value that could be potentially taken away by designated landmark. But I think overall the direction's good. You know, I look at the pictures. Clearly, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. There are some of those buildings that, to me, make a lot of sense, and some of those buildings that I kind of scratch my head. I have a lot of confidence in the Landmark Commission and the direction they're going. I think this task force is very good and appreciate the hard work you're putting into it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kleiman. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, staff, for that presentation. I too agree with the fact that we need a task force, and I would support, as your chair, Ms. Catherine Seale, brought up, having the preservation task force run by that committee. I think that would be a great idea. We do have a bunch of volunteers and hard workers that know a lot about preservation. I think they could form a great committee and report back to the council in 90 days with their recommendations. I think it would be a great opportunity for us to leverage one of our great committees here, the Landmark Committee, to get this work done. So if we need a motion to that effect, I'd be happy to make a motion right now. So moved.
Second.
And then I'll have a few more comments. And certainly I'd like the task force to look at what type of demolition delay would be appropriate, whether 10 days or even 30 days. I know with a short window as short as 10 days, that may not be even enough time to call a landmark commission meeting if preservation is needed. So perhaps a 30-day delay is in order. Additionally, we do need to look at adaptive reuse, as Councilmember Kingston said, as well as if we're going to put certain constraints and want to see these properties preserved to help maintain the character of our great city, we need to look at additional financial incentives that the city could give to these owners to make it worthwhile and for them to make that business decision to keep and restore these buildings, since I know it is a labor of love for many of them, but we certainly do want to lessen the financial hardship. And so with that, Council, I hope you'll support the motion to have the Landmark Commission create this task force, as Catherine Seale laid out earlier, then report back to the Council. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I also would support a task force concept going forward. And I definitely also think it should involve the owners of the property. I think too many times decisions are made without them being involved, and they're the ones that's going to be most affected by this economically. I think the goal here is to save the worthwhile architectural structures. There's a lot, perhaps older structures that are not worth saving or too dilapidated to do anything with, but those buildings that are important, then I definitely think we should do that. And I think Dallas needs to lead the way and do a better job. I just think historically we have not done a very good job. Our sister city to the west, Fort Worth, has been one of the leaders, I think, in the nation, kind of keeping the old with the new. And I think Dallas needs to showcase, you know, the past as well as the future. I think it's important to the history of a city to do that. That's what makes a city what it is. So I hope that we can gather in a collaborative way as many people as possible, architects, also as well as just the citizenry, the owners, and city officials, and come up with a grand plan that is going to be an improvement over what we've got. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Seat three is, oh, you get your light on. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And my question, and I guess it's kind of was brought up, then I was, with the task force that you're talking about, I was wondering what the, you know, Ms. Seale's task force, it was totally separate? Is that how you were proposing it? I was wondering what her task force role would be.
No, not at all. I think it's one or the other, and I think clearly we'll all work together on any task force, and I think we all have the same interests and realization that ultimately, if we don't have the support of the stakeholders downtown in terms of the property owners, it's not going to be successful when it gets to you. I mean, it's going to be more difficult. So I think everybody realizes the need for the preservation community to work closely with the other downtown stakeholders and work towards a process that will be successful. And I really wanted to spend a little bit more time about talking about all the successes we have had. And we've had a lot of successes downtown, most recently with the Statler and Library Project, clear to the Mercantile. So we've got a lot to be proud of. At the same time, we're taking this moment in time to kind of reflect and make sure that we're going to move forward properly.
So did you find the group you identified in task force as inclusive? It seemed like Ms. Seals was a pretty inclusive group.
Yeah, I think what she's talking about, particularly with bringing in the planning community, the architecture community, I think we're all heading the same direction. By no means is there a need for two task forces.
Right, that's what be a single we seem task like force. We had duplicated.
We don't need that. So.
So is that what Mr. Griggs's proposal is? Or I just want a clarification on what we'd be voting on then.
I will clarify it in a moment.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Yeah. Mr. Cadane.
Thank you, Mayor. David, tell me if I've got a piece of property downtown, I've got a building on it, and somebody decides to deem it historic, and I've got plans to redevelop that property, and can they come in and deem it historic, and then I can't touch it?
Well,
tell me I can't.
There's a process whereby if you don't yourself apply for it for reasons of financial incentives and things, there is a process where either Landmark Commission, the Plan Commission, or City Council could initiate a historic district on your property. And should the Landmark Commission choose to recommend designation, you as a property owner then have the right to appeal that decision to City Council. Just as in any zoning overlay, if you will, it can be initiated by the City Plan Commission Council or in historic designation by the Landmark Commission. So that process could start. Yes, sir.
Therefore, I couldn't redevelop the property.
Well, hopefully there'd be financial incentives through the process that might help you redevelop the property, but you would have to go through, should it be actually adopted, if you appealed it and council cited that the designation was appropriate, then there is an appeal process you could go through once it is designated. It does not prohibit demolition. It just means you've got to go to the Landmark Commission to get permission to demolish it. But also the preservation community would be working with you to find an adaptive reuse of that property.
Okay, if the Landmark Commission says I can't demolish it, I've got to get their approval, and they've already deemed it a landmark.
Yes, sir.
Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Again, you can appeal if it's a similar process that if the Landmark Commission were to deny your demolition, then you could appeal that to the City Plan Commission.
Where I'm going with this is to find out where the property owner's rights
are. It can impact the property owner's rights. I can't deny that.
Okay, and you're going to explain this motion, correct?
Yeah, in a second.
Because I may not be for it.
In a second.
Thank
okay.
you.
Seat 10 is Deputy Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In wanting to understand the motion for Mr. Griggs, the only thing I was going to share is I spoke with I was talking to the chairman of the Arts, Culture, and Libraries, Mr. Kingston, is that in regards to the task force, if it would be something that the Landmark Commission would recommend to the Arts, Cultural, and Libraries, and then we would recommend it to the full council.
So that's one way to approach this. This is what I'm thinking. I'm trying to listen to your motion, Mr. Griggs, and capture the spirit of it, and at the same time capture the spirit of what has been said here. As Mr. Cossum says, we don't need two, we need one. I think the Landmark Commission needs to be very involved in this process. And I am comfortable with taking the lead from them on how we set this up. The detail of this, though, is extremely important. So I feel uncomfortable just giving them carte blanche to do it however they want to do it. What I would suggest for this body is we ask the Landmark Commission to work with Mr. Kossin to structure the task force. And I've been advised that we need to have this as a voting agenda. And they can do that by the time we get together next time, and they tell us what it is, and then we vote it up or down. Would that be okay with you, Mr. Griggs?
Yes, if it's not on the agenda listed that we can vote today, then we're just getting briefed, then
yeah,
that's the way we'll do
it. Okay, all right. So, Ms. Seal, I'll work with you, okay, and Mr. Kossin to make sure we get the work done quickly, bring it back here, and so we can all know who's on that task force representing the right groups that she mentioned and the right people, and I think we'll be okay.
Can we?
Ms. Alonzo.
I just want to make sure. I wanted to ask if we can bring it through the Arts, Cultural, and Libraries Committee.
Well, it's just going to take longer.
No, it's just going to be presented on our next committee.
Well, if the Arts, when is the Arts, Cultural, Library meeting?
Well, I think let's make sure we're not talking across purposes. Let's get the authorization for this task force on the voting agenda for council. Uh-huh. And then bring the task force's report back to our ACL so that right. We have an
oh, the work. Right. Yeah.
No,
you're talking about the work.
Yeah.
The names the work. And the committee,
no.
Yeah.
Does that suit everybody?
Yeah, she just said the names.
The committee that is being, is that?
You want the committee to?
No. Look, I just think we need to get it going. I think everything needs to run through that committee as far as the work is concerned.
Right.
But I think this group should see, here are the folks in the task force, and we voted up or down, and we can get it done quicker that way.
Okay.
Okay? All right. Okay, they're going to be doing what Mr. Kossin just presented this morning. No, it is putting together a strategy, okay, I'll let Mr. Kossin answer that question so I don't misspeak.
Certainly. Really to look at how to proceed to develop the preservation strategy for downtown. And maybe that's something, some of that is looking at incentives, other mechanisms, looking at how other cities handle things. It's to identify structures that are really in need of local designation and primarily to help establish.
Speak in your mic, Ms. Cousin.
Establish that strategy and to identify buildings that are in need of special attention.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Kossin. Thank you for the presentation. That's what we'll be doing. Thank you, Ms. Seal, for leading again. Appreciate it. I'll have my office set up a meeting with the two of you. Okay.
Mary.
Next item.
Mayor and Council, the next item has to do with the update and results and accomplishments of the strategic planning efforts that we have had under the during the last fiscal year, and we're going to have both Mark and Latoya present that to you this morning.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. We want to try to cover a couple items today with you. First of all, look back to the highlights of 2013 and 14 in terms of accomplishments, and then also do a look ahead in terms of next year's process and some of the things that we're overlaying in terms of organizational improvements in the next year at the same time. So with that, I'll turn it over to Latoya. We'll do a tag team here.
Good morning. I want to walk you all through the planning process and activities from FY14. First, a strategic planning overview. A strategic plan is an active management tool which provides focus for an organization. It's part of a continuous improvement process. This process does not end with a document called a strategic plan, but challenges organizations to define performance by how well they anticipate rather than react to changing conditions. Strategic planning is a process for organizations to set and achieve its goals, which can vary from 3 to 5 years up to 100 years. In the City of Dallas, our plan is built upon our mission, vision, and values, which you see here. The mission, vision, values guide the city's activities. They serve as the basis for our strategic plan, departmental activities, and performance targets, which roll down to the individual employee performance plans. This graphic shows you a year in review. October's strategic plan briefing provided an overview, including components of a strategic plan and the tools typically used. In November, staff teams were formed. Their work informed the December committee briefings, and all this information was gathered, along with your feedback, for the final presentation in April.
As we begin to incorporate more data into our strategic planning, we pulled up a few of the big dials that we want to incorporate on our dashboard. First of all, as we look at unemployment, you know, certainly Dallas is doing very well compared to last fiscal year at 5.4%. And then you compare this to the nation, which is at 5.8%. Population growth is pretty astonishing when you look at what happened between 2000 and 2010. We actually grew more in the last year than we did in that entire decade. Also, this morning I was looking at data and looking at density. And so as of 13, Dallas actually exceeds not only, of course, Fort Worth, Austin, and San Antonio, and Phoenix, but now even Houston in terms of its overall density as a city. Building valuation growth, remarkable almost 30% growth in value of development activity during this period. On the next slide, we'll see property tax values. I know you're very familiar with this because of our budget process, but 4.27% increase in values. And then sales tax collections, a 5.7% increase here. And even in the new fiscal year, we're continuing to see very healthy growth. Hotel occupancy tax, almost 15% more than budget for 2014. And then as we look at major projects completed during this review period, you can see fire stations 32 and 37, the Highland Hills Library, the Bear Street Satellite Police Facility, Municipal Courts Building Renovation, and of course, Love Field Modernization Projects. And these are just a few of the highlights. This next slide is a summary of the entire strategic plan in terms of action items. I'll have LaToya go into some detail, but just in summary, we have 83% that's either completed, ahead, or on track. Now I'll ask LaToya to summarize, and then the detail for all of these, of course, is in your appendix beginning on page 36.
Information on specific accomplished activities by KFA follow, beginning with public safety. In public safety, some of the highlights of accomplished activities include crime in the 27 hotspots decreased over 11%. 96% of 911 calls were answered in 10 seconds or less, and over 2,300 youth contacts were made during the first 6 months of the PAL program. Overall, 80% of activities in public safety are complete, ahead, or on track. In economic vibrancy, the target of securing $35 million in vertical projects was more than doubled, as $83 million worth of industrial and warehouse development, totaling 2.7 million square feet, was secured. Also, great advances were made toward transit-oriented development with Council's help. Additionally, the Continental Bridge opened with rave reviews and over 50,000 visitors last fiscal year. These activities helped almost 90% of economic vibrancy plan items to be complete, ahead, or on track. In clean, healthy environment, the residential recycling rate reached 75%, and two Operation Beautification events were held, with 36 groups participating citywide, ridding their neighborhoods of over 50 tons of trash or brush. Overall, close to 85% of activities are complete, ahead, or on track for clean, healthy environment. In culture, arts, and recreation, a target was set to increase rental and concession revenue 5% at Fair Park. Staff worked to increase revenue 34%. Overall, culture, arts, and recreation activities, over 80% of them are were achieved. In educational enhancements, the MoneyGram Literacy Center opened, which doubled literacy program enrollment. Staff also exceeded the 10% increase target in ESL and GED classes, increasing enrollment 104% in FY14. This key focus area had 80% of their activities complete, ahead, or on track. Finally, for the second consecutive year, the Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts awarded the city the Gold Leadership Circle Award for our financial transparency website. Overall, over 80% of E3 activities were on track. And now, Mark will give us a look ahead.
So before we look ahead, this next slide is just a review of the slide you saw when we first began. We wrapped up in December and March with committee briefings and then council briefing in April. Next slide brings us forward in the spring. We made adjustments based upon city council input. And then, of course, in summer, we finalized the fiscal year 15 budget after opportunities for a lot of citizen input. Which brings us to today to brief you on the accomplishments through September 14. And then also, we're beginning to layer in new initiatives like the Neighborhood Plus. This coming winter, we begin the sunset reviews, looking at 25% of our overall budget. We're going to launch a new organization-wide Lean Six Sigma program and business planning through our Center for Performance Excellence. And we're going to conduct, of course, your annual retreat for early input in January. The next slide brings us into spring of next year. We're going to brief the council on the sunset review results, and then we're going to begin early public engagement in our budget process, as well as present the proposed fiscal year 16 budget. In the summer, of course, finalize the budget, and in the fall, conduct our annual citizen and this time business surveys as directed by the council. And then we'll come full circle again to brief the council on the fiscal year 15 accomplishments.
As we continue to refine the system, the FY15 through 17 plan will feature SMART objectives, which will be the measurable steps we will take as an organization to accomplish our overarching goals. All of our goals and activities will continue to tie back to the budget process, but in a more direct manner.
Now, concurrently, we're going to be pursuing organizational change initiatives, and you can see them listed here. You've been receiving your CUSP or the Culture, Systems, and People reports from the city manager on a regular basis. We're also going to be aligning new department business plans. Every department would have a business plan, which would align with this overall strategic plan. We're also, as I said earlier, going to launch the citywide Lean Six Sigma effort, and then incorporate major citywide metrics and create dashboards. And then this last slide really is an outline of how we want to enhance citizen engagement. Some of this is already occurring. Of course, our citizen survey, the community survey, adding the business survey. We use the Epic page, the two-way data exchange, either through our virtual town halls or our tools like MindMixer, 311 data center, exploiting the data there, and then, of course, the voice of the customer through Talk Dallas and various other means. So with that, Mayor and Council, we would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. No one has lights on, so I'll go ahead and ask mine, unless somebody else wants to talk. Okay. Good. Thank you very much, Mark. I think we've got the process in place now in that regards. Big miss, okay? And I don't see anything here on poverty, okay? It is our number one issue that's holding this city back, is how we deal with folks that are on the other side of the economic gap. We're third behind Detroit and Philadelphia. It's unacceptable. And we've got to figure out, this is a hard one. I know this is kind of dealing with the broad issues, but it's, I just hope we build that in a major way to this strategic planning process, because if we don't deal with that issue, you know, all the, fixing all the potholes is gonna be for naught in this. The Where, and the other issue that I've got, it's less of an issue and more of a strategy, and that is, I've said this before, I don't see us really wrestling IT to the ground in the strategic planning process. It's an expensive investment. It's a huge enabler for cost savings, for reducing labor on many, many, many fronts. And I want to make sure we build that in the discussion early in this process this year. Is that fair?
Absolutely. I know Bill Finch is working very hard on that effort, and we'll make sure that his efforts are included.
Okay. So how would we do that?
Well, if I might interject, I want to just make sure that today's briefing is on results from the previous.
He did some future stuff.
But as far as the future, those are the things that we would be focusing on and bringing back, that would be coming back to you in the retreat and other.
Yeah, I saw things like Neighborhood Plus. I just didn't see, poverty. I didn't see IT.
I see. Okay.
In those things. So I just want to put them first in line on this, unless the council disagrees, and obviously the council's will. But I, those are the two really important things.
Yes, sir.
And then last for me, and this is just my business tradition. The essence of strategy is sacrifice. Okay, that's just by you're doing something and not everything. So to be a really good strategic plan, you have to. We are by nature an inclusive organization where everybody wants to get a piece of that on some planning process. And I think it's inherent for us to go through this with that mindset that we're going to be doing some things and not other things. And we should be intellectually honest with ourselves as we debate those things, what we're going to be doing and not doing. So help guide us through that process. To me, one of the best ways to do that is for an annual plan is do a top 10 to-dos. And to have a list of things that you're going to promise. I heard all those projects that were 78% on target and stuff like that. But really, what are the top 10 things that this city needs to accomplish in the next fiscal year? And try to get this very wise body to agree to those. It helps us kind of know where you're going to be spending the time in that. So that would be the only addition that I would give in that. But I love the format. Thank you. 12 is Mr. Kingston.
Sorry, I didn't get my light on quick enough, Mayor. Thank you. Can you go to, 9? How does EcoDev estimate the unemployment rate?
This is just data off of the systems as far as the internet. I mean, they confirm that, but that is their database, but we get the same data current off the internet.
And why are we using COGS population estimate? I just looked up the Census Bureau's estimate, and it's different.
We had to use the North Central Texas Council of Government estimate because they are the only entity that has an estimate from FY13 to FY14. The other estimates are not out yet. The national estimates are not out yet.
It's a small issue, but let's be very careful with COGS data. COG's been wrong frequently in the past, so just take care when you use that stuff. Let's see. The EcoDev page 16. How did our economic development activities, what's the causation link here? Did
did city incentives cause $83 million in commitments? I don't know how that works exactly.
Ryan's going to address that issue for us.
Mr. Kingston, is this on?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, we were very aggressive in trying to get more warehouse distribution. Almost all of these had some type of city incentive or infrastructure associated with them. And we were lucky enough because of the economy to exceed these goals.
And what are those? What are the Todd projects that we supported?
Mr. Kingston, we had five different transit-oriented development projects. The pre-planning was supported by the Housing and Urban Development, and they were trying to have us do mixed-income developments around the city. It's Vickery Meadow, it's around Hatcher, and it's the Lancaster Corridor.
Great. I think those are super important. Last one, 22. This just brought to mind, when are we going to be updated on the South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund revenue issue?
I'm looking to have that report finalized this next in December.
Okay. The reason I'm a little AR about it is the board keeps asking me. So we just need to know.
We hear the same issue.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. That's it, and we'll go to the next item. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor. I'm sorry. It doesn't have to do with that. It just has to do with the comment I heard, but I do need to say something.
Judge Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a note. I serve on the COG board, and COG's data is more localized and usually, more than usually, a high percentage of the time, more accurate for this region than the national data. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Gonzalez.
Yes. Our next presentation is going to be delivered by Ms. Cheryl Orr, and I think she's been introduced to the council before. She's our new ethics and diversity officer and has quickly hit the ground and getting things going. So if you would go ahead and present that.
Good morning. I have been here 6 months and spent that time putting together
Thank you. Try it again. Good morning. I've been here 6 months, and in those 6 months, developing ethics and diversity program for the city. Today, though, I'm going to update you on the ethics program and where we are with it. To date, we have, I'm going to talk about a couple of things. First of all, there was a citywide training initiative that I'm going to give you some information on. We've completed that. There was going to talk to you about the current citywide ethic resources that we have, and then sort of introduce you again, but in an expanded way, the ethics cycle overview, and then also the ethics work plan. The goal of the ethics program at this time is to assure the availability of all city employees the resources they need to work in an effective ethical environment. So that's what we're going to work towards. The citywide training initiative started in April of 2008, and the goal was to train as many or all employees in the city. We initially worked with Navigan, who was our ethics consultant, and they did a series of focus groups throughout the city, did some research on the ethics documents that we have here, and then developed an ethics training, which is a two-hour training that they've done. As of June 2014, this office was responsible for training the remainder of employees that were left once I started this position. The training effort completed in October of 2014, and I'm going to give you some data. I think probably the most important is that we count the number of city employees at 12,360. We actually have trained to date 11,811 employees, 96% of them. That 11,811 employees, it costs $419,000 basically to train those numbers of employees. That's about $35 an employee, and it's about $1,500 per session that the city paid for those training. There were about 270 sessions throughout the city, and the average class size was about 34 employees. And frankly, we used 41 locations throughout the city, so we were all over the city providing this training. Just the survey results, and this is counting up. We kept a spreadsheet of all the surveys that came in. The majority of respondents strongly approved of the training effort at 85%, which meant they said strongly agree or agree. 11% were neutral, we call it ambivalent or neutral, and about 4% questioned the value. So I think for all that was done, we got pretty good responses from employees. Now, what I did when I first came is said, let's look at what the current resources are as it relates to ethics here in the city. And so here you have a list, and I'm just going to go, like, we have a code of ethics, which is significant. A lot of jurisdictions and other places do not have codes of ethics. In our personnel rule, ethics are addressed. We have a Dallas strategic plan, which you just went over, key focus area 6. Objective 3 basically says enhance the culture of ethics at City Hall. We have the auditor's report, which was published in 2012. Our performance evaluation system addresses not only ethics but also diversity. We have a strategic customer service plan, which also has ethics in it. And then we have the ongoing training in the new employee orientation. There was a section that was presented to all new employees during the new employee orientation. In our WOW program, one of the 9 values is integrity, and public safety ethics training is in their curriculum. So that's really the foundation that I found when I got here. What I've done is what I call an enhancement strategy for based on the things that were already here, and this is what we've done is created an ethics cycle. The first part of that, and this comes from a lot of research in the field as well as what I found when it got here, so that the vast majority of work really from this perspective is in prevention. The next part of the work is in compliance, and so it really is an ethics and compliance office, and the final part is in correction, and I'm going to go through what we've done in each one of these areas. In the prevention area, there are a lot of things that have been happening. This office is basically there for information, for consultation, and referral for employees. We've pushed out an email box. We have 2 sets of phone numbers. And we also have an intranet website, which when you go on the intranet, up in the left-hand corner, you'll see a blue box that says Office of Ethics and Diversity. And that box now has a whole array of information that employees can access. We created an intake form, which we ran through the city attorney's office, so that we could just capture, as phone calls or information comes into us, we can capture the information from employees. And also, ultimately, to help us produce data. And then we have, I've actually been having ongoing meetings with departments and their leadership, asking to meet with the department director and their leadership. I've actually done 9 meetings now, and 11 are scheduled, and we are going to get through every department in the city. And again, that's really important. That's talking to the leadership and actually having a dialogue with them about what we can do to enhance, if you will, an ethical environment here in the city. Also, that we are focusing on implementation of the auditor's report. That report is based on what we call the Federal Sentencing Guideline for Organization. There's 7 standards. We met some of them we did not meet, and some we partially met. So I am working to meet all of those standards. The ethics measures for fiscal year 15 budget, we put in 2. One is 75% of the EAC members will at least be aware of this office, and that 80% of the focus group members will be aware of reporting process, which is very important. We will continue on ethics training in a lot of different ways. Choosing the ethical path is the city's training, 2-hour training program. We've basically completed that. We're now going to move that to the new employee orientation, which HR has actually helped us incorporate into their biweekly orientation session. And then we are also going to be putting together lots of other training using ethics videos and online training, a lot more online training at this point. We also are going to be looking at creating a reward and recognition program, if you will, for ethical behavior. So you'll be hearing more about that. And then we will be looking to participate when we can in other citywide training programs. For instance, the HR sponsors a supervisory training program and have asked us to participate in that, and we've done it twice, actually, and it's totally appropriate to talk to supervisors about ethical conduct as well as they're responsible for the behavior of their employees. So, ongoing ethics communication. We've got our webpage now. We're working at this point on brochures. We have cards. We have email announcements that we'll be putting out on a monthly basis. The industry calls those email blasts, and then we'll be meeting with employee groups on a regular basis. We also want to identify speakers on ethical subjects. We've been to the Institute of Ethics and Social Responsibility at SMU. We also went up to UNT in Denton and talked to someone who specializes in ethics. So we'll be identifying, and we'll have those available. And we'll also be bringing some of those to department heads meetings just for information. In this month, we asked Navigant as a final product to come in and try to bring back those same folks who came through the focus group in 2013 and ask them some follow-up questions. And as a result, we'll be getting a report from them that talks about ethics in the city of Dallas. So we're looking forward to that. Another important piece is what I call retaliation prevention. Most anyone that you talk to that would want to report something will always say, but I'm afraid I'll be retaliated against. So we want to make sure that folks feel comfortable, trust the environment that they're in, and that they'll report things so that we can address them quickly without fear of retaliation. And then finally, I have created an ethics work plan. I've gone over it with the city manager. It is a work plan that really talks about what am I going to do in order to what I call stand up the program. And so the work plan is through January of 2015. The next 3 months after that, I'll be working on a strategic plan, which will really say, what are we going to do with this program over the next 5 years? Compliance. Compliance activities that are currently going on in the city are these list of things, and I mean there's investigations going on and report writing, disciplinary action, if you will, processing grievances, filing criminal charges, whatever needs to happen from a compliance perspective. And the list of departments that are involved in those compliance activities are at the bottom. We also have a City Ethics Advisory Commission, and again, those are councils in point, and you're aware. I wasn't sure if Mr. Skinner was coming, but I've certainly been in touch with him. The Ethics and Diversity Office role in the compliance piece is to regular dialogue with human resources and the HR employee relations staff to talk about areas or issues that come up that may have an ethical component. I have been meeting monthly with the City Auditor's Office, the Fraud, Waste, and Abuse Administrator, to understand the kinds of complaints that come in. We've collaborated with the City Attorney's Office, and although I've met Mr. Skinner and talked to him, and so consultation to the Ethics Advisory Commission when asked, and then upon request, consultation during any investigative process. Correction is the last area. Current city correction activities that are currently going on is that when there's an issue, there's a retraining that goes on, re-engineer or redo processes to prevent a reoccurrence of an ethical breach. There may be the implementation of disciplinary action at that point. There would be a review of internal controls to see if there was a failure in that area, and also to develop new processes for prevention. So the ethics and diversity role in the correction area is to provide recommendations on best practices in addressing future or potential ethical issues or breaches, if you will. to design ethics awareness programs specifically for department divisions, work units, for whoever would ask, to be creative in designing an awareness program for them, and then to be available for departmental consultation for ethical issues. And we've actually done a lot of that even up to now. So in summary, we've opened the office. We sent out an email, I don't know if any of you saw, with an announcement saying this is the office, this is the email boxes, these are the phone numbers so that you can get in touch with us. There was an announcement that went out beginning of this month. We've completed the ethics training, which is a massive, by the way, I went to a conference called Ethics and Compliance Officers, which was in Atlanta, and most people do not do 100% or 96% of their employees. They do a lot more online. So that meant that the effort, they actually were impressed that we had made that effort. By the way, that conference is going to be in Dallas next year, so we're looking forward to them. We want to enhance ethics programs related to prevention and correction and compliance. And we want to implement any ongoing training that's related to ethics, and we'll be doing a lot of that. And then collaborating with the auditor and the city secretary on ethics compliance activities. Next steps, to finalize the ethics program metrics, to design and deliver specialized training, and to continue education and communication on a regular basis to employees from a prevention perspective, reminding employees to think ethically, those kinds of things. And then to conclude the ethics audit by complying with the recommendations. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for your presentation. My only comment would be, I think I've been in office now almost a year and a half, and the training has not been offered to that set of council members. I think it has to previous council members, but I believe we should be held accountable and be given the same training that we're asking all of our city employees to. So,
absolutely.
I think maybe it was supposed to be in our retreat, and we didn't have the retreat last year. So I would look forward to, you know, seeing that presentation for ourselves. And because I, you know, if we're asking the city employees, we should be given, you know, we should be obliging to the same requirement and also being held to the same accountability. So super. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Ms. Case, let me just react to that because I agree with you. We took action in a voting agenda where we empowered the Ethics Commission now to put together their thoughts on how some of the ethical standards that we should be meeting, and they need to do some of that work as well. But there's some basic ethics training that we can undergo as well. So that was kind of the pacing and sequencing on that issue. So just FYI. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Orr, can you give me an example of an ethical issue that is addressable through education and prevention?
Well, I think probably abuse of leave, or not leave, but time sometimes is a problem. Sometimes people feel it's okay to leave a little early, to come in a little late. And so my sense is we will put together some education talking about, you know, if you're here for 8 hours, you should work 8 hours, and anything less than that from a government perspective would be use of leave. So that's the kind of, I mean, that's a basic example of the kind of thing we would do in terms of educating.
The reason I ask is I'm having trouble. I probably just need to understand better your program. Mm-hmm. I'm having trouble understanding where there's an ethical issue that's complex, that is something that isn't merely indicative of an employment problem. I mean, I need to have a better understanding of when we need training and prevention, mm-hmm. and when we need employment action, because I think there's, you know, at some point there's a reason to say this isn't really that difficult of an issue that you're facing. It's the problem is you know.
Right.
And certainly I don't want to treat, you know, you can't solve problems in an organization by mass firing. I don't think that's healthy for anybody, but we need to understand when we're spinning our wheels trying to educate somebody who really just shouldn't work for us.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. Let me tell you, I think the word that I would use is ethical dilemmas. We sort of know right from wrong. We can assume that we know right from wrong, but there's a whole middle ground that I call ethical dilemmas. And actually, I've been having those conversations with department heads and their senior staff. They know exactly what I'm talking about. As in the work that they do, there may be things that come up, tickets that are given that they don't kind of see as a problem, but may be a problem, and so they have to think through, should I take those tickets, should I not? That's one of the things that comes up. Should I take this big basket that they send to us at Christmas? Is there, you know, are we going to have to do something in return for it? So those kind of dilemmas, which is really my big word, is because, again, I think the vast majority of people know right from wrong, but there are dilemmas that I think we should be talking to people about and helping them make the right decisions so that they don't, if you will, cause themselves problems.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Allen.
Good job. That's impressive to have 97% of the employees. I think when this all started up, the intent was to establish a culture of ethics. And I noticed it wasn't just a month or two ago, you put out a list of the upcoming training programs, and it went to all the council members. Any one of us that wants to attend could attend those meetings. But I would say at our level, too, the best part about it is the fact that we have access. You'd mentioned SMU, North Texas. We have access just picking up the phone and going out into SMU, which is such an asset to this city, McGuire School of Ethics, and then talking with Dr. Rita Kirk and understanding. Just sit down and have a conversation with her about, well, what this is what at City Hall, or what's your thoughts on ethics? I did that a couple of years ago. What a fantastic lady. And the entire council and staff went out to, at SMU. But one of the things she said that always stuck with me is the fact that when it gets to ethics, it's you know, we put so much on rules and regulations and do this and don't do that. And the reality was, what she said was that God was able to put all of his rules and regulations on two tablets, called it the Ten Commandments. You know, it's a culture of ethics. It's that simple. It's a culture of ethics and just doing the right thing. Unfortunately, us human beings, we have the ability to rationalize why something would be okay. And that's the challenge, is you know, we rationalize why things are okay, and sometimes that's what gets us in trouble. You're on the right track. That is really good to hear, that when you're in Atlanta around your peers, they're starting to say good things about Dallas.
Well, they are.
And to me, that is what this is all about, is nationally, when we establish this culture of ethics, that the rest of the nation starts looking at Dallas. And they're talking in terms of Dallas and the things that we've done. The mayor talks about poverty and helping our people. Well, that's national. When people realize that and how we step up to help the least of these, well, that's the companies that we want to come to Dallas, Texas. They're going to be looking to come. That's economic development. They want to be here. And those are the good companies that will, in turn, reach into their pockets and help us better the quality of life for our citizens. So it's just a win-win-win-win for everybody. So you keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much for this presentation, and thank you for bringing that forward to all our employees. I do want to ask, and maybe you did say it and I didn't hear it, and I apologize, 96%, where's the other four? Is it because they were absent? Yeah. They're not?
We call them the moving target.
Okay.
Some were left, and we've actually reached out directly to supervisors and said, your employee has not attended. We got lots of emails saying that employee's gone. So I'd say that number goes way down when you look at the turnover, which is what we did look at, by the way, that we're probably within a really close 100%.
I was going to say, because it's just like when school started, you know, they had some kids missing, and then they went back and they discovered, like you just said,
yes,
they moved or transferred or whatever.
Right.
And so that's important,
yes,
because, you know, if it's 100, we should say 100, because that's something that we can consider talking. What was the thought, and or the, if there were any comments, responses to when they went through that training, I don't need it, or?
Yeah, the vast majority, and I did a lot of the training when I started, read every evaluation that came through. The vast majority of people appreciated the training. It's very different, I don't think, other than maybe police and fire who have it in their curriculums. General employees have never had anything like that. So I think the mere fact that we did it gave us a plus. And then the actual training itself was a two-hour training, and we were very, very clear not to go over 2 hours. And it included all the aspects of training that you need. The people, small groups, there were videos, there were exercises, and then they were gone. So frankly, I was glad to see that kind of training, and we got really, really good responses from employees on the evaluation sheets. And by the way, we got back over 8,000. I don't know, were the other three sort of, sometimes people run out and that kind of thing. So 8,000 evaluations is a pretty good number to go by.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. That was a very professional, thought-provoking presentation. I appreciate that. Many of us, obviously, here around the Horseshoe, we've been exposed to, you know, ethics in the past. You know, in my MBA program, we had, you know, business ethics there. And, of course, being a real estate broker, you know, we have obviously a lot of that is taught by the National Association of Realtors as well as the Texas Association. So I've been exposed to that. And also when I served as Councilwoman Hill's commission member of Innovation and Productivity Commission, obviously I was subjected to that, and I thought it was a very good exercise, and it was very very enlightening on what the do's and the don'ts, if you will. And I also agree with Councilwoman Gates that we should subject ourselves also just the way the employees and staff should be. So I would more than be willing to take that course again, because I just think it's that important. Jerry said it best. A culture of ethics, you know, that's where this city hall, this city needs to go. So I'll certainly be in support for that type of thing. And thank you all very much.
Thank you. It was a good presentation. Let me ask a couple of questions. You talked about creating metrics, next steps. I guess that's how you grade whether we're effective or not.
Right.
That'll be interesting.
Well, I asked Navigant to help me with that before they are gone, and so they've sent me some ideas as to how to create them. So
good, good. You've been here 6 months. What type of sense do you have about the city of Dallas versus other organizations you've been at in regards to this issue?
Oh, I was very proud to see the effort, the training effort. As I said, when I told people we are committed to training all, if you will, 13,000 employees, people were amazed. So I think that was an excellent first step, and now we just have to continue. It's like you could spend $419,000 and then do nothing. And so my sense is you spend that and then continue to remind people about ethics.
So that's what you've done. I guess the citizen reads in the paper every once in a while somebody has just gone off the reservation. And so they sense that maybe this is an endemic issue at the city, and I'm curious just your qualitative judgment about the city of Dallas versus other organizations you've been at.
Right. I think this is a huge organization, almost corporate-like,
right.
And I think that there have been no more or less, if you will, difficulties. What I think is important, and one of the things that I read as part of my research, is that no ethics program can prevent certain kinds of breaches. But what's important is that the organization address those breaches quickly and effectively. So my sense is, if I'm out there trying to prevent those things from happening, but when they do happen, when the organization addresses them swiftly and says, we're not going to tolerate that, then that's what you do.
But you're getting a sense we're kind of middle of the pack of what you,
I do.
That's out there.
I do. I don't think we're any worse in any way. You know, again, things happen. I haven't seen lots of things that have happened.
Okay.
But I've also know that as I continue, I'll start to get some more concerns, and we'll see how we'll see how that does.
Okay, good. Let's go to the last item, which is Mr. Gonzalez's 10 or 15 minutes about what he's been doing.
Okay. 10 or 15 minutes of what?
About what he's been doing.
As the mayor suggested, this is a little bit of a report on what we've been up to internally in terms of making changes throughout the organization and how, at the end of the day, how these programs, that two of which are somewhat internally focused, are really going to, at the end of the day, be working to the benefit of serving all of our citizens. The first topic I want to take on is wellness. We have talked about it in a variety of different ways. You can think of wellness in a much more global way, like the World Health Organization. But our focus is going to be principally on the physical health for now. There's other parts of our well-being that we want to expand to, but right now it's on physical as much as anything else. And our program is going to be touching on the various components that are shown there as far as education, fitness, and nutrition. And at least in my own experience, I think others that have gone and gotten serious about some of this, that nutrition is probably one of the, is the most key element of seeing about how you can make an impact on your physical well-being. Now, we have Forrest Turner assigned to see about having a, at the top of the organization, focus on this, making sure that it starts with this council. We've had a couple of members that have embraced it in a very deliberate way. One even more deliberate as far as getting out there with a press conference, et cetera. But we, you know, what that helps to serve is a message to the rest of the organization that this is something that everybody is going to be involved. Our senior management team is involved, the department heads, and quite literally all of our city employees can be helping one another. And at some point, hopefully not too far in the distant future, be helping the rest of the community with this overall topic. When we look at what we currently have on board as far as our city resources, there's really a number of things that we already have in place in terms of our Parks and Rec Department, Fitness Center at City Hall, OCMOC, and a number of different programs that have already been developed that are making some good results in terms of changes in lost weight and other improvement in our health, but so much more needs to and can be done. With regards to those continuing efforts, we have researched best practices, interviewed numerous other organizations that are doing this kind of activity, and really already out there with huge successes that we can learn from. The other is we're identifying programs, components that we think would work best with our city operation. The one of the next steps that we're going to be doing is seeing how we can roll out some pilot projects. The fact of the matter is that unfortunately we have about 20% of our employees that are morbidly obese. Morbidly obese. For them, just having some basic beginnings in terms of getting out and just walking for a set amount of time is going to be an improvement in their physical health. We also have nearly 80% of the entire of the organization that is currently overweight or obese. Now, those are the challenges that we face, and the efforts are going to be to see how we can do some pilot projects that will help to integrate exercise and better nutrition as our employees work on their daily activities. There's also an interactive website that we'll be putting together to help them in that regard. Now, the future briefings on this topic will include metrics that will identify whether or not we're being successful or not in these efforts, have an organizational structure, cost model, and an implementation schedule. Now, the next topic, once again, is somewhat inwardly focused on our employees, but nevertheless extremely important, and that is in the area of training. training, when you look at other organizations, and I was really quite taken aback about this first statistics, and in fact, I just flat challenged it and thought that it had to be wrong. But the fact of the matter is that most organizations, when you look at big, small, et cetera, are spending close to $1,200 per employee per year on training and development. That for the city of Dallas, that would equate to about $9.6 million. I can assure you we're not spending that. What we're trying to do, however, is the resources that we have identified is to make the best use of them and to see how we can those can be leveraged to enhance what our employees are made aware of to improve how they perform. There's a number of benefits that come by having better trained employees, reduction of exposures, increasing efficiencies, just on and on and on, which is the reason why other companies in the private sector in particular make sure that their employees are well trained, because it makes at the end of the day, on the bottom line, a very positive difference. Now, when we have had training, we've actually had our surveys from our employees about what they feel about it. It's fairly extraordinary in terms of that they feel that the bit of training that we do provide is good, that they wish they had more. And the stats there show that it's not just by a slim majority by any stretch. There's several departments that are into this business in a big way. Those are identified. And again, we can be doing more. Now, one of the efforts that we have had over the years is a program called City University, principally operated by our HR department, that has pulled together a number of different training topics with our employees. There used to be a fairly substantial budget on there associated with the program, but during the recession, that was in large part eliminated. Recently, we added allocated about $300,000 towards that effort. And I changed the word added to allocated because it really wasn't a new expense. We just took it out of everybody's budget and set aside this $300,000 to see about making this possible. When we have the new programs that will be run with this new resource are going to also be run out of our HR department, and they will be doing the numerous things there in terms of follow-up and making sure that the monitoring is going on so that we're assuring ourselves that we're getting the best value for that money that is being spent. Now, some of just for your information, there's course offerings that are there that are currently available, some new ones on the way, and additional courses that are being planned for this coming fiscal year, in which we hope that the council's commitment towards training will continue. Now, it is not just HR, obviously, that provide training. There's numerous other areas that where training is being provided from different departments, as far as customer training, environmental training. Obviously, we've got academies that we have going on. So there's a number of other training elements that are out there. But for our general civilian employee, that's where it's fairly lacking. We will have dedicated our HR staff to see about working with these other departments to make sure that we capture that training, what are the amounts that are being provided, how much they're costing, so that we can get a better understanding of just what we are spending or not spending in this area. Now, as far as our next steps, we're looking to roll out the training that's provided there that in front of you and trying to impact we are targeting to impact just over 5,000 employees with this effort, which would come down to about $60 per employee. More to come as we move on with this effort, and
thank you.
That's my review.
Thank you very much, appreciate it. Yeah, on this, on something else. Okay, great. Let me take afternoon speakers first. We'll take our afternoon speakers. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez.
Thank you. I'll now recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When your time is up, please stop and address any comments to Mayor Rawlings. Your first speaker, Nikki Emery. Not present. Dolores Phillips. Ms. Phillips will be followed by Pat Ford and Jan Mackey.
Hi, my name is Dolores Phillips. Address is going to be 2385 Sweetwater Apartment, 223 Grand Prairie, Texas, 75050. There are 9 documents filed with the Secretary's office to explain the ongoing corruption and how the methodical mayhem was unleashed to continue the ongoing cover-up of massive corruption here. I also wanted to say for October 25th, 2013, when I was taken to Green Oaks by Corporal Codner, and he said that he spoke with Mayor Rawlings that morning, is that the reason that phone call took place was to intercept the documents that I emailed downstairs to the Dallas City Hall Copy Center that was supposed to be mailed that day. And what I've learned while humbly enduring the corruption here and what was unleashed to cover it up, whatever you want to call it, AKA the oneness, being harassed by females who are exploited and prostituted, used as prostitutes to have me open up to as a guise to cover up the ongoing corruption. Now, this is what I want to share with everyone, because it's very important, because kids' lives are at stake with this madness of same-sex initiation into this, whatever you want to call it. Prostitution is a person's body used in exchange for whatever they agree, the two people, two or more people agree. So when you unleash such madness like you did to cover up your ongoing corruption, your premeditated abuse of official capacity, and invidious official oppression is mind-blowing to me. But what I want to share is the prostitution is real with the government employees used as sex bait to lure, to open up, to get me in, to say we're one, so just leave, don't talk about the corruption, this we're one, this is what we do, and this is how we do it. If female government employees can be used as sex bait, prostitutes, why are women on the street being arrested for the same thing? Because prostitutes on the street have to prostitute to feed drug habits or they'll die, to eat, to sleep, to pay rent. Now, with that being said, these documents right here show an ongoing cover-up, and you have methodically unleashed a system of racism so harsh and so brutal, inclusive of sexism, is that you really should be ashamed of yourself. And that I do believe that Dallas continues to believe that you are invincible because of your corrupt connections. But I need you to know that I will give it back in peace and truth, and it just takes time. The only invincibilities are truth and time, and I will give your corruption back to you in peace and truth. Have a good day.
You too.
Pat Ford. Ms. Ford will be followed by Jan Mackey.
Good morning. My name is Pat Ford. I live in 1116 Essex Drive in Cedar Hill, Texas. I have a nonprofit organization in the southern sector of Dallas. Dallas Community Fellowship was founded in 2000.
Just bring your mic down just a little bit more, your mic.
Okay. Dallas Fellowship was founded in 2007. We're in that community trying to give back and help our children in that community. We are the second highest crime area. You have a printout of some of the things that we're trying to do in that community. We're trying to give back and try to help build our community back. We want to work with the Growth South to give back to our community. I'm a bit nervous. This is not...
You're doing fine.
Okay, this is not me. I'm more the ministry part of our organization. So I started this organization to give back because I was a victim as well as in a community, the southern sector of that area. So we're trying to build a rehab there. We have homeless. We have children that's age of 16 to 30 that's homeless in that area. We're trying to give a nonprofit. We're trying to build a rehab there for that community. We're volunteering in that area, have done so for the past 30 years. In the forefront now, our community has not had a neighborhood association leader in over 30 years. One of our schools in that area has not had a PTA meeting in over 10 years. So we're trying to go back and do a multi-purpose center in that area. And if you can see on a couple of those pages, we started out in the Oasis Apartments. We're now moving into the Rosemont, and we're asking the city to help build us a multi-purpose center in that area. So we're trying to come back and gather our kids. Our kids are walking out of school. There is no truancy enforcement in that area. We have a lot of gangs there. I'm actually in the midst of all those gangs trying to start programs. DCFI has done so for the past 2 years with no monies, and all the organizations that we're linkaged with help giving back to that community. So we're asking the city to help us to go back and capture our kids, try to rebuild lives, to revitalize. We have people that has property that want to help us to develop that area. So we're just asking for the city's support and assistance in that area. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jan Mackey, not present. This concludes your speakers.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have a birthday this week, Ms. Davis's birthday, and we've got Tiff's Treats cookies for her. She is down at the horse park right now doing some work down there, and so she's on city business, but I thought it would be fun if as many of us as can turn on our microphones, and we'll sing happy birthday into the microphones in case she's listening or wants to hear it later on the replay.
Okay, all right, let's do
so,
it.
So, Mr. Cadane, would you get your mic on so you can lead us?
Yeah, I'm totally ready.
Do it.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Carolyn. Happy birthday to you.
Well done. Well done. That was the best we've ever sounded. Maybe because Dwayne wasn't there. All right. It is 11:17 a.m., November 18, 2014. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the city attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda. Paul Heller et al. V. City of Dallas. We'll go into executive session. We'll stay right here. Thank you.
Thank you.